Hello and welcome to the Practice Drill Podcast, episode 36. This week, we analyze the opening game of the 2022 NRL season. Then we look at the rest of the round to come. Lots of very exciting games. Then following that, we preview the second test between Australia and Pakistan. And finally, we remember Shane Warne and what he meant to us and also the game of cricket. Shout out to Sencho for providing that killer intro and introducing my good mate, Blaze McKee. Blaze, how are you? We're doing it remotely again today, but how's it going?
Very good. Obviously, you know, we'll get into it, but the NRL season kicked off last night and that was exciting to see. Obviously, we've got a bit of a fantasy comp going, which adds a bit of extra interest for me. And yeah, I think all the sports really heating up with, yeah, the AFL to start next week as well.
And just to let all you fans know out there, Blaze McKee off to a flying start in the fantasy. What'd you get up to? About 200 points last night, mate.
270, yeah. To be honest, I can't claim all the credit. I did select a few players based off who else, like their most selected players in the competition. So can't take all the credit there.
We're just going off all the punters and dribblers out there. But anyway, guys, if you'd like to follow us on Instagram and Twitter, the handle is @T_practicedrill, especially on Twitter at the moment, guys, keeping you up to date on all things NRL, AFL, cricket, rugby union, and NBA basketball as that season starts to get closer and closer to the playoffs. Now, Blaze, as I said in the introduction, starting off talking about 2022 season opener in the NRL, and it was Manly visiting Penrith. And coming into the game, there was a lot of uncertainty. Manly actually favourites to win since Nathan Cleary's been ruled out for the first three rounds of the season. What were your expectations coming into this opening game?
To be honest, I was a little bit surprised that I guess Manly were a little bit favoured, as you said. I think obviously Cleary being out was a huge thing for the Panthers. But having said that, they're still, you know, the premiership side. And although Cleary's probably the premier player in the competition, I think, you know, it takes more than one player to win a premiership. And you know, there were some other factors playing at home in front of what was going to be a packed out crowd for the first time since, I think, round 15 last year, it was said during the broadcast. I think the Penrith guys were always going to be pretty fired up to go out there and, you know, make a statement and start their season as they did last year.
Yeah, that's exactly what I tipped them. I know a lot of people, at least a lot of people in our, you know, our friend group, all kind of went for Manly because of that reason of Cleary not being there. But I agree, you know, I think Nathan Cleary is an incredible player in an incredible team that has an incredible culture. So although you take him out, there's still that grit and that determination to never, you know, let a game just go and let another team win it. Like, that's Penrith, and they've been like that, you know, now for the past three seasons. So obviously we haven't announced the score yet. For those who missed it, Penrith won 28-6. So not a close game, but really a shocking result to start the season for Manly.
Yeah, and also a little bit surprising, I guess, in the first round, you tend to see some closer scores just as, you know, teams are still hitting their straps. Obviously, they've played the trial games, but round one, I guess, that intensity goes up another level. But Penrith were pretty impressive, and on both defensive and offensive sides of the ball, you know, they managed to keep Turbo pretty quiet throughout the night. He only had 155 metres and the one try assist. You know, there were a few moments where he looked like he was going to break out and, you know, had a few good runs, but on the whole, I think Penrith did really well to shut down, I guess, Turbo and then also, you know, Jason Saab and Ruben Garrick, the Manly back three that was so dangerous last year.
Yeah, and I mean, like, you look at a game like Tom Dravojevic last night, 155 metres and a try assist for anyone else in the league is a really solid game. But we're used to him getting up towards that 300 metres, you know, a couple of try assists. So I think Penrith last night really have provided a good blueprint to the other 14 teams in the NRL to say, this is how you stop Tom Trbojevic. And I mean, we've seen teams do it before, like those top four teams last year. We know Manly have struggled against them. And I think that struggle has continued into the start of this year.
Yeah, it was pretty interesting. And I think that's going to be something that Manly have to shake off. You know, obviously, I don't know whether internally they've got that feeling, but certainly externally, I think the critics are going to be coming pretty hard at them this week because that narrative is going to start up again.
Oh, definitely. But what was insane that I was going to say is, and you touched upon it, it was that stellar defense from the Panthers that was kind of built off the back of their kicking game. And usually Nathan Cleary's doing, you know, most of the kicking, but Jerome Luai was getting in there. Sean O'Sullivan, who I thought had a great game standing in at number seven, was brilliant with their kicking game. And they just targeted Jason Saab the whole night and just made sure that Tom Dravojevic wasn't getting the ball going down his throat and making that extra 20, 25 metres for when the wall got there. And Penrith basically just shut Manly within their own 30 for most sets last night. That was pretty impressive, wasn't it?
Yeah, obviously it helped that their attacking sets were, you know, finishing around the 40 so they could get a nice attacking kick. But it was interesting to see the kicking tactic. You know, maybe they went a little bit shorter with the kicking game, but made sure the kicks were either contestable or were hitting the ground and then get that kick chase. So it seemed like as soon as that Manly back three were picking up the ball, they were almost getting tackled straight away. And I guess that's a huge thing now in the game of NRL. We see that back three taking tough carries out into their own end. And if they can get, you know, 30 metres in the first three kind of tackles, it sets you up for a really nice set. But last night, Penrith managed to stop that and it seemed like Manly were only getting maybe 10 or 12 metres out of their first kind of three tackles.
So how dangerous does this win make Penrith look, considering no Cleary and missing a couple of players that they had in that grand final win last year?
Yeah, I think it makes them look very dangerous. Obviously, they were the premiers last year, so they're going to be probably up there again. For me, it was pretty impressive to see some of their, you know, their younger guys really step up. You know, Tago was in the centres and had a great game. And Stephen Crichton, I thought, was really good, who's a guy, he's had a lot of potential. He's played some good footy over the last two or three years, but probably took a bit of a backseat last year to Luai and Cleary. But you know, he was really impressive last night and had some really good touches and also kicked pretty well, I think, off the tee.
And just a player that I want to give a shout-out to for Penrith, someone who I've never really thought too highly of with this game, just kind of a sound fullback. But Dylan Edwards had one of the great games last night, in my opinion, just the way that he impacted the game. 344 running metres with 105 post-contact metres. Both of those were game highs, which is crazy considering you have Trbojevic and Brian To'o on the ground with him. So that was an amazing performance. But where to now for Manly? They play the Roosters next week, who people have in their top four. I personally have them making the top four. And we know that Manly struggle against those type of quality oppositions.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. As we spoke about, that narrative of flat track bullies is going to come this week. And if they lose to the Roosters next week, it'll get even stronger, I think. You know, for them, it probably is about controlling maybe the territory a bit more. It felt like Penrith were basically always on their line and Manly didn't really get many chances to attack, you know, with much fluidity because they were always coming out of their own end. So, you know, I expect guys like, you know, Jake Trbojevic to have a big game next week and hopefully get them a bit more ascendancy through the middle and then allow, I guess, Cherry Evans and Foran to run the show a bit more.
Well, I guess we'll have to wait and see. But we've got a full round ahead, another, what, seven games. So let's have a look ahead to the rest of round one. Tonight, there's two games, Raiders Sharks here in Canberra and Broncos Rabbitohs to follow. No Reynolds for the match, obviously. He was a little bit iffy with injury. And then he caught COVID and that meant that he was going to get out of his, you know, 7-day isolation yesterday. Bit disappointing for that game to not have that hype of, you know, Reynolds against his former club.
Yeah, that would have been a huge narrative. And even on social media, I saw a bit of back and forth between a few of the Rabbitohs boys and Adam Reynolds. So it would have been great to see him out there. But yeah, he's not playing. It's going to be really interesting for the Rabbitohs to see how they can go. Obviously, no Latrell Mitchell, but, you know, Lachie Ilias and Blake Taff are two guys that they look to have big futures. So it's going to be interesting to see how they can start off. Down in Canberra, I think it's a pretty interesting game of two sides that, you know, have potential this year, but I don't think anyone's quite 100% on where the Sharks and the Raiders are going to finish up. So I think this game's probably going to be a pretty close one. And, you know, it might, I guess, expose a bit more whether these teams are going to be contenders for that top eight or they're going to fade away.
Yeah, I think that Raiders-Sharks game for me is probably going to be game of the night. I think it's going to be hard to separate them because there's a lot of unknown about the Sharks with their new signings for Nukan, Nico Hines, obviously the main signing. And for the Raiders, they had a really un-Canberra-like season last year where, you know, they finished outside the eight considering, you know, what a couple of years, you know, before that, they're playing in a grand final against the Roosters and they're pretty close to winning it. So I think they'll be very keen to want to bounce back and a milestone game in that game for Jack Whiten playing his 200th game in the NRL and for that club. So I think that'll be huge. And just to touch on something you said before about the Rabbitohs game, apparently Blake Taff injured himself at training yesterday. So he's a bit iffy for the game. So that'll be a bit costly for the Rabbitohs because there's a lot of unknown as well there with them losing. You know, yeah, Latrell's out with injury, but they lost Reynolds, Gagai, Sua. I think they lost one of the Burgess boys as well. So there's, you know, a lot of changes to that side. So it'll be interesting to see how they go. But on Saturday, three games, Roosters, Knights, Warriors, Dragons, Tigers, Storm. What do you think's the game there of Super Saturday?
For me, I'd probably look at the Warriors-Dragons just because it's probably two teams that are a bit closer, even though probably neither of those teams are going to contend at the end of the season. I think the Roosters-Knights could be a pretty one-sided affair. As you spoke about earlier, the Roosters are probably top four contenders this year and are going to look to build on the season they had last year. And it's going to be really interesting to see, I guess, Keary and Walker partner together in the halves. Obviously, you know, Walker had a pretty standout year last year in his rookie year, and Keary, we know the quality he has. I think the Knights, a lot of people pick them to struggle this year, so that could be a bit of a blowout, and then it could be the same, I think, for the Storm Tigers game.
Yeah, I think you're probably right when we're looking at closeness. I'm really keen to actually watch that Roosters-Knights game because, you know, the Roosters obviously had, you know, half their squad out injured or retiring last season. So I guess we still have that expectation on the Roosters that they're going to be that top quality side. And as I said, I have them in the top four, so I have faith that they'll do that. But I guess there's no, you know, you can't be 100% certain coming off, you know, the season they had last year. My Titans could have knocked them out first week with one extra pass, you know. We'll never, ever get over that. And also, like, Kalen Ponga now, the Knights captain, like, I'm really excited to see him lead that team. And, you know, they got Gagai, who I rate highly, in the centres there with, you know, Bradman Best on the other centre. So they do have some strike weapons, and we know their forward packs, Afidi, Clemmer, Tyson Frizzell. So they do have a quality team. They just do struggle to get the results out of it. So I think that's my game of the day. But on to Sunday, Eels-Titans, going to be a ripper game and a bit of a dud game to follow Cowboys-Bulldogs. I think it's pretty clear Eels-Titans game of the day on Sunday.
Yeah, definitely. Again, you know, it's the start of the season, so I think there's a lot of unknowns about the teams and I guess every team's got pretty high aspirations. You know, there's been a lot of hype in the preseason about the Eels and is this their year? I think the Titans probably slide under the radar a bit, but I think internally they'll be thinking this is a year we've really got to start to push up into that top six sort of positions. Obviously, they've been around the 7 to 10 spot quite a lot in recent years, but they'd probably want to kick on a little bit. And then the Bulldogs are another team that have quite a lot of hype, but also a lot of, you know, unproven talent there and a lot of young guys in key positions. So two very interesting games. And, you know, we're talking a lot about, I guess, uncertainty, but I guess that's the beauty of round one.
Yeah, I can't wait for that Eels-Titans game. You're right, there has been a lot of hype about the Eels, but there's a lot of hype about the Eels every year and they struggle. I think Parra's last game in the finals against Penrith has made me kind of think more highly of them. I thought that was a really gutsy performance. Although they lost, I did think they should have won. They had, you know, some great opportunities. A lot of things didn't go their way, but God, they kept it a close game and looked really dangerous. You're right about the Titans. You know, they made finals last year, which was great. And I think they just need to repeat that again this season. They obviously, you know, don't want to be minor premiers. They want to be top four. I don't think it'll happen. So you're definitely looking between that 5th to 8th range. So a good, you know, upset win there in Parramatta might be the best way to start the season. And Cowboys, Bulldogs, I think they're going to be two of the lower ranked teams. I know there's a bit of hype about the Bulldogs with, you know, kind of them starting fresh and making a lot of changes and getting Phil Gould involved with the club once again. But yeah, I think the Cowboys might actually get them there, but it should be an interesting game. But yeah, that is the round one preview done. And we'll move on to another preview, but this one of a different sport in a different continent. Australia v Pakistan, second test starting tomorrow in Karachi. What do you think of the first game? Ended in a draw, but you know, there's been a lot of talk about it.
Yeah, I think there are probably two narratives coming out of that first test. The one is, you know, it's great to see Australia back touring and cricket being played in Pakistan. I think you could see, you know, just on social media and whatnot, the passion for cricket over there and the excitement to have cricket back in the country and to have a team like Australia who, you know, really haven't toured at all in the last two or three years, which has been quite disappointing, back over there, I think was a really exciting thing. And that was quite a historic event. But then on the other hand, I guess the pitch didn't help the test too much. You know, there were only 14 wickets taken across the whole 5 days. And really, it was a bit of a bat-a-thon.
Yeah, it was a really weird test match. I'll be honest, I didn't enjoy it at all. I just thought, you know, to points you brought up, the lack of wickets was disappointing, but that only occurred because of the pitch that was delivered. I mean, it can't be good for cricket or for Pakistan cricket returning back there to be delivering a pitch like that first game, where it didn't really deteriorate as much as people thought. You know, come day four, day five, where, you know, what happens on the subcontinent, especially in India, is those pitches start to break and the spinners have a field day. And even, you know, we saw Manus Labuschagne practicing on that thing in his apartment, where he kind of made his own little pitch that had these little metal bits that if the ball bounced off it, it would take a weird, move in a weird way. And we didn't even see that happen, which is, really, really odd. But how does Australia improve? You know, they were the ones that, you know, they were the only team that got bowled out in an innings for 476 in the first innings for Pakistan. Then Australia bowled out for 459. And then Pakistan went none for 252 in the second innings. And then that was the test match. How do they improve?
Yeah, I think the big thing, I guess, on the batting side is, you know, turning those 70s and 80s into 100s. I think that was one thing that was really impressive from the Pakistani side. Guys like Imam Haq scored double centuries in both innings, and Abdullah Shafiq, the other opener, scored 100 in the second inning. So when they got in, they went big. And obviously for Australia, they had a lot of starts in that first innings, but some of their, you know, key batsmen who would probably expect themselves to do a bit better in those situations, guys like Steve Smith and Manus Labuschagne in particular, you know, got out in the 60s and 70s on, as you say, a pitch that wasn't really offering much. So I think that's the big improvement they'll make in the second test. In terms of the bowling, it's pretty difficult. You know, as you say, they were forced to bowl a lot of overs on a pitch that wasn't helping them much. So it's going to be interesting to see, I guess, if the second test pitch helps them a bit more and if it, I guess, in particular helps the spinners a little bit more, which is going to be, I guess, an interesting debate for Australia in that who do they select for this next test?
Well, yeah, it's definitely, if you're looking at that extra spinner, we're definitely looking at a Swepson or an Agar. I think the thing with Agar is you get a little bit better batting, but I don't think batting is necessarily going to be the difference. As we saw in the first test, I think it's going to come down to taking those wickets. Obviously, I think the second wicket was still, you know, fancy the batting side more. But I think if you can get a good spinner like, you know, Swepson's probably the second best spinner in Australia. You can get him coming in and offering some support to Nathan Lyon besides those kind of part-time spinners. I think they will do a lot better. To your question, who might miss out? I think Mitchell Starc misses out. I know he was, you know, the Alan Border medalist this season. He had, you know, a decent World Cup and then had a pretty good Ashes series. But I just think he's at his dangerous when the ball's moving around, and it just didn't look like it was doing too much in that first test. So it might be good just to keep those line and length bowlers in Cummins and Hazelwood there. You've got Cam Green as that third pace bowler and obviously, you know, handy with the bat. And then you can just put Swepson and Lyon in there to round out that bowling attack. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I'd probably have to agree. I did see some reports that maybe it would be Hazelwood that misses out just because they want to, I guess, keep Starc in there for, I guess, his pace and X factor. But if it was up to me, I think Hazelwood's shown his ability, especially recently, to bowl in different scenarios, different formats and different conditions. And I think, you know, if the pitch is going to be a bit more spin friendly, it's going to be important that the other end is maybe less so wicket taking, but even more just if you can have an economical bowler at the other end and really, really tie opposition down at both ends. I think, you know, Hazelwood's going to be a huge benefit in that regard.
Looking at Hazelwood's stats for the first test, first innings, 26 overs, none for 53, an economy of 2.04. And then the second, he only bowled the five with an economy of 1.6. So, you know, he kept it tight. I don't know why you would get rid of him. He's also relatively fresh considering he only played the one Ashes test. So, yeah, that's an interesting call for people wanting to keep Starc. I guess the only advantage of keeping Starc is Starc and Cummins is you have a right-arm seamer and a left-arm seamer. I only think that's the only positive, really. Now, a final topic, just a quick one, just wanted to touch upon it. Obviously, the devastating, sad news of Australian cricket legend Shane Warne passing away last Friday in Thailand of, you know, heart attack, natural causes. Super surreal. It's going to be one of those moments where you look back in, you know, a few years' time and ask someone, you know, where were you when you heard the news about Shane Warne passing? You know, it's one of those kind of big moments. How do you feel about this sad passing?
Yeah, as you say, it was a pretty strange feeling, I guess, when I first saw it. You think, man, is this real? And you know, I guess Shane was a larger-than-life character and someone that, you know, you just expect to see every summer when you turn on the telly. So it's definitely going to be pretty weird, I think, next summer when the cricket starts up again. And I think you could tell, you know, just by how, you know, it was a dominant story on all the news platforms and all social media, I think you could tell, you know, the impact and feeling was, I guess, shared, you know, across Australia, both within sporting circles and outside, which I guess showed, you know, the impact he had in Australia and also internationally.
Yeah, there's some of those tributes that came through, you know, from people that, you know, you never associate with cricket. You know, Ed Sheeran was a, you know, interesting one. And obviously, you know, he's from England. Mick Jagger as well. Like, you forget that, you know, they're from cricketing nations as well. That would have watched a lot of Shane Warne play, but, you know, you just don't associate them with the game of cricket. And a lot of those, you know, players that played in that, you know, great Australian team through the 90s and early 2000s that were just so dominant in world cricket, you know, your Gilchrist, your Pontings, you know, it was very, very sad to see all those guys come out and share their emotions on it. I guess one of the positives and it's something that's definitely well deserved, and I'm sure it would have happened at some point, you know, in you know, later life for Shane Warne, but the MCG renaming the Great Southern Stand after Shane Warne, so it'll be the S.K. Warne Stand. That's a great tribute, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. And I think, you know, for people like us that are a little bit younger and probably miss him bowling in his prime, it's probably easy to, I guess, forget how good he was. But when you see, as you say, the real greats of the game, you know, from multiple countries, and then you see, you know, acknowledgements like this where that he's going to have a stand named after him, I guess you realise just how good he was.
Yeah, I totally agree. You know, I was a big... I'm more a Fox Sports cricket watcher. I really enjoy that commentary team, and he was a big part of it. I thought he gave great analysis, although sometimes, you know, he was he was very, very wrong. You know, he just had this unbelievable cricket smarts that not a lot of people have. And obviously that came from, you know, playing, you know, a couple decades of cricket professionally, but also he just, I think it just came naturally to him as well. So yeah, devastated, you know, and obviously think of his family and, you know, all of his teammates and friends that, you know, he played some unbelievable cricket with. And I think it's kind of cool that, you know, although, yeah, you're right, you know, we did kind of miss him in his prime, but since we're big cricket fans, we've seen his highlights and, you know, that ball of the century will be remembered forever. You know, just as, you know, we kind of remember Don Bradman's, you know, batting average, things like that. That'll be definitely something that will stick around in cricket folklore for, you know, probably centuries to come, really. But that will do us for episode 36 of the Practice Drill podcast. If you'd like to follow us on Instagram and Twitter, the handle is T_practicedrill, keeping you up to date on all things NRL, AFL starting up next week. The rugby union, the super rugby's going on right now, cricket and NBA basketball. So Blaze, what are you looking forward to in the next week of sport?
Yeah, I think it's rugby this week. Obviously, the NRL and Super Rugby going on, you know, side by side for the first time this year. It's going to be great for us rugby fans.
That will do us for this week. Enjoy your sport and we'll see you earlier next week.